Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning and welcome to Sunday morning worship here at Essex Church, where Kensington Unitarians have their spiritual home. Ours is a community created by all those who walk through our doors, and we bid you welcome, whoever, whatever, however you are this morning. We all bring the very stuff of our lives to this time of togetherness. And through our singing and our silences, our words and our presence here, we seek that which we need. Be that peace for the troubled, inspiration for the down at heart, acceptance for the struggling, a chance to share for the joyous. Whatever version of the human story you bring with you here today, and I wonder what your particular version of that human story might be, here is an opportunity for you to be in connection once again with yourself, in connection once again with one another, and in connection once again with that which you hold to be divine. The Buddha taught that even though we were to use this one candle flame to light 1,000 other candles, this small flame would not be diminished in the slightest. We light our chalice flame each week to connect us with Unitarian and Unitarian Universalist communities around the world. May its small flame remind us yet again of the gifts of freedom and reason and equality in matters religious and spiritual that we are fortunate to possess. And so a simple story now of giving and receiving. And it comes from a time, a long time ago, in the northern part of Israel, in a small village. And it said that there was the richest man in town was sleeping as usual through Shabbat morning services, unlike all of you who are fully awake at this moment. And every now and then that rich man, well, you know, he would almost wake up. You know how you do sometimes, trying to get comfortable on the hard wooden benches that they had in those days. And then he'd sink back into that rather delicious deep sleep that we all know. And one morning he awoke just long enough to hear the chanting of the Torah verses from Leviticus, in which God instructs the children of Israel to place 12 loaves of challah on a table in the ancient wilderness tabernacle. And when services ended that day, the wealthy man woke up, not realizing that all he'd heard was the Torah reading that happened every week about how God wanted 12 loaves of challah. That rich man thought that God had come to him in his sleep and had asked him personally to bring those 12 loaves of bread to God. Well, the rich man felt so honoured that God should single him out, and he felt a little foolish. Of all the things that God could want from a person like him, of such renown, 12 loaves, that didn't seem very important, but who was he to argue with God? And so he went home and he baked that bread. And when he returned to the synagogue, he looked around and he decided that the only proper place for his holy gift was alongside the Torah scrolls in the ark, a very special place. He carefully arranged the 12 loaves and said to God, thank you for telling me what you want. Pleasing me makes you so happy. And he left. No sooner had he gone than the poorest Jew in town, the synagogue janitor, entered the sanctuary all alone. He spoke to God, Lord, I'm so poor, my family is starving, we have really got nothing to eat. Unless you perform a miracle for us, we're surely going to perish. And then, as was his custom, he walked around the room, tidy it up, and when he ascended the bima and opened the ark, there before him were 12 loaves of challah. A miracle, exclaimed the poor man. I had no idea you worked so quickly. Blessed are you, O God, who answered our prayers. And he ran home to share the loaves with his family. minutes later, the rich man returned to the sanctuary, curious to know whether or not God ate the challah. Slowly he ascended the bima, opened the ark, and saw that the challah was gone. "Oh my God, you really ate my bread. This is wonderful. You can be sure I'm going to bring another 12 loaves with raisins this time." And so it was the following week. The rich man brought a dozen loaves, again left them in the ark. Minutes later, the poor man entered the sanctuary. "God, I don't know how to say this, but I'm out of food again. 7 loaves we ate, 4 we sold, 1 we gave to charity, and now there's nothing left. And unless you perform another miracle, we're surely going to starve." He approached the ark, slowly opened its doors. "Another miracle," he cried. 12 more loaves and with raisins too. This is wonderful, oh God." And so this became a weekly exchange, a ritual that continued for so many years. And like most rituals that became routine, neither man gave it much thought. Then one day, the rabbi, detained in the sanctuary longer than usual, watched the rich man place the dozen loaves in the ark and the poor man redeem them. The rabbi called the two men together and told them what they'd been doing. Oh, I see," said the rich man sadly. "Oh, God really doesn't eat the bread." "Oh, I understand," said the poor man. "God hasn't been baking challah for me after all." And they both feared that God would no longer be present in their lives. And so the rabbi, you know, religious leaders get trained in this sort of thing. The rabbi asked them to look at their hands. You might want to look at yours right now. Look at your hands. "Your hands," he said to the rich man, "are the hands of God giving food to the poor. And your hands," said the rabbi to the poor man, "also are the hands of God receiving gifts from the rich." So you see, God is still present in your lives. Continue baking, continue eating, and in this way, your hands are the hands of God. A lovely story. Well, I haven't got a copy of the next reading, but I'm hoping all of you have. The reason I put this on a sheet was because it's one of those juicy readings that I think it needs study. And if I could have, I'd have given you all a highlighter pen to mark your favourite bits of this. I've had to ask Anthony to come in and help me with the delivery as well, because he's going to go first so that I get a sense of how to be a prophet. It's from Khalil Gibran's The Prophet.
"Then said a rich man, 'Speak to us of giving.' And he answered, 'You give but little when you give of your possessions. It's when you give of yourself that you truly give. For what are your possessions but things you keep and guard for fear you may need them tomorrow? And tomorrow? What shall tomorrow bring to the overprudent dog burying bones in the trackless sand as he follows the pilgrims to the holy city? And what is fear of need but need itself? Is not dread of thirst when your well is full, thirst that is unquenchable? There are those who give little of the much which they have, and they give it for recognition, and their hidden desire makes their gifts unwholesome. But there are those who give little and give it all. These are the believers in life and the bounty of life, and their coffer is never empty. There are those who give with joy, and that joy is their reward. And there are those who give with pain, and that pain is their baptism. And there are those who give and know not pain in giving, nor do they seek joy, nor give with mindfulness of virtue. They give as in yonder valley the myrtle breathes its fragrance into space. Through the hands of such as these God speaks, and from behind their eyes he smiles upon the earth."
It is well to give when asked, but it is better to give unasked through understanding. And to the open-handed, the search for one who shall receive is joy greater than giving. And is there aught you would withhold? All you have shall some day be given. Therefore give now, that the season of giving may be yours and not your inheritors. You often say, I would give, but only to the deserving. The trees in your orchard say not so, nor the flocks in your pasture. They give that they may live, for to withhold is to perish. Surely he who is worthy to receive his days and his nights is worthy of all else from you. And he who has deserved to drink from the ocean of life deserves to fill his cup from your little stream. And what desert greater shall there be than that which lies in the courage and the confidence, nay, the charity of receiving? And who are you that men should rend their bosom and unveil their pride, that you may see their worth naked and their pride unabashed? See first that you yourself deserve to be a giver and an instrument of giving. For in truth it is life that gives unto life, while you, who deem yourself a giver, are but a witness. And you receivers, and you are all receivers, assume no weight of gratitude, lest you lay a yoke upon yourself and upon him who gives. Rather, rise together with the giver on his gifts as on wings. For to be over mindful of your debt is to doubt his generosity, who has the free-hearted earth for mother and God for father. Words from Khalil Gibran. As a minister, when you conduct a wedding ceremony, you're supposed to give a sermon telling the couple how to have a successful marriage, and with some more general words for everyone present about the importance of love in our world. I never feel entirely comfortable with this bit because I oftentimes think that the couple standing in front of me, and indeed the entire rest of the congregation, are probably more expert in the field of loving relationships than I am. What on earth should one say at a wedding? Hence my delight when various people, on seeing the title of today's service, burst out laughing and told me that there is a much-loved and oft-repeated episode of the famous long-running American comedy TV series, Friends. And this episode has the very title of my address, Giving and Receiving. Now, to cut a long story short, two of the friends, Monica and Chandler, are getting married, and they've asked their friend Joey, who is an aspiring actor, to conduct their ceremony, which you can do with a special license in some parts of the United States. And in one episode, this particular episode, Joey spends every available moment practicing his opening words.
How are you doing? Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to celebrate the special love that Monica and Chandler share. It's a love based on giving and receiving, as well as having and sharing. And the love that they give and have is shared and received. And through this having and giving and sharing and receiving, we too can share and love and have and receive.
That's lovely. That goes on for 30 minutes. And it's not just Joey that has spotted that giving and receiving and possibly having and sharing are the basis of life itself. That quotation from Goethe on the front of today's order of service sheet, human life runs its course in the metamorphosis between receiving and giving. That quotation caught my eye months ago, and I've been pondering upon it ever since. It's there in the most fundamental building blocks of life itself, in the very process of respiration, in a living creature's ability to breathe in and out, an exchange is taking place. And this process of exchange occurs throughout our lives on all sorts of levels and in all sorts of ways. So it's not surprising then that the world's religions and philosophical systems all have much to say about giving and receiving. As social beings, we humans need to be able both to give and receive. Our individual striving and selfishness is tempered by our altruism, by our concern for others. There is a reciprocal nature to this process. We are cared for, and so we learn to care for others. We meet the needs of others and understand that our needs too will be met. There are so many fine teachings to refer to here. Islam particularly reminds us of the importance of generosity and hospitality towards our guests, especially towards the strangers in our midst. Judaism has much to say about the giving of charity to those less fortunate than ourselves. Jesus' teachings on our tendencies to hoard things in life are very much to the point, I think, here in our crowded Western world, reminding the rich if they hold too tightly to their worldly possessions, they may struggle in vain to enter the kingdom of heaven, as a camel might struggle to find its way through the eye of a needle. We've started a monthly Bible study group here at Essex Church, and we're currently reading from the Acts of the Apostles. And in the early chapters, frequent reference is made to the early Christians pooling all their possessions with one another, and of the gory end that came to the couple, Ananias and Sapphira, who lied about having given everything to the community but kept some things back for themselves. Now, it's easy to get lost in the juicy details of all these stories and teachings, but behind all the rules and the good advice is, I think, a much deeper teaching. And that teaching is about the nature of life itself. Khalil Gibran put the words into the mouth of the prophet in the piece we heard earlier on. For in truth, it is life that gives unto life. Now, we get stuck in the stories, in the details, in that ego-based deliciousness of being generous, perhaps, or the ego-related shame of our own vulnerability and neediness. But if we step beyond that, there is a very joyous freedom, I think, that recognises we're all in this together. That it is one big game of giving and receiving, a great big theatrical play during which, to paraphrase good old Shakespeare, we'll all play many parts. And one of the worthwhile things to do from time to time, I think, is to check if we've got stuck at any point in this process, to do an audit, perhaps, of our giving and receiving. For if we're alive and human, then I reckon we can pretty much guarantee that somewhere in the process of giving and receiving, there'll be some very tender, wounded places in us that are longing to be recognised and brought into the light of awareness for acceptance and healing. Here are just a few possible areas that might resonate with you. Do you find yourself ever giving to others and then wanting gratitude for that? Do you sometimes feel hard done to in life? Feeling bitter or resentful, envious? Can you really ask for help and support when you need it most? Do you ever have that feeling that you really must take care of yourself? Is your holding on to material possessions in any way a sign that you fear there may not be enough for you? Can you think of something you're grateful for right now? These are just a few areas, I think, that we could audit. I'd be very interested to add to this list to find out what particular issues you have on this interesting spectrum or cycle, rather, of giving and receiving. Going back to that biblical book, Acts of the Apostles, Paul reports Jesus' words that it is better to give than to receive. And one of the pleasures about being a liberal religious person, I say, is that you can cast doubt on such biblical teachings. Maybe Jesus said it, maybe not, we'll never know. Maybe we can now comprehend the physical reality that there have to be people to receive in order for other people to give to them. In which case, both givers and receivers surely are equal. Maybe we now can comprehend the imbalances that occur if one person constantly takes the superior position of being the one who has something to give and then looks down in some way on the recipient of their good deed. Maybe now we understand the reality that giving and receiving comes in all shapes and sizes, that it's nothing to do with the size of your bank account and everything to do with the openness of our hearts and our minds. Archbishop Helder Camara, 20th century Brazilian Catholic leader, so-called Bishop of the Poor, he did so much to point out and fight against injustices in Latin America. He's the one who famously asked, "How come when I give food to the poor, they call me a saint? And when I ask why the poor have no food, they call me a communist?" Camara also reminded us that no one is so poor that they cannot give, nor so rich that they cannot receive. This giving and receiving is love in action in our world. It's a very big and complicated version of the story we heard earlier on of the loaves of bread placed and then found in the synagogue each week. Just as the rabbi told the rich and the poor man in that story that they both are the hands of God, being given to and receiving from, giving and so receiving in return, so we too, I think, are doing God's work when we accept the circumstances of our lives at this moment with as much grace and generosity as we can muster, accepting our temporary good fortune, if that is what we're experiencing right now, and accepting the vulnerability and the neediness that are, I think, at the very core of life, reaching out to one another with open hands again and again and again. Amen.